Now, for Parshas Chayisara, we have the shlichus of Eliezer, Vashbiacha Bashem Elokei Hashamayim Velokei Haaretz, Asher Lo Sikach Isha Livni Mibnos Haknani. Here we have a case where a father is imposing his will on the son, Avram on Yitzchak, as to who his marriage partner will be. And of course he sets up limitations. Number one, it can't be from Bnos Canaan. Number two, it can't be that he'll settle over there in Aram. He's got to come back to the land. And all this is within the purview of the shlichus of Eliezer to find a marriage partner for Yitzchak. Now the question that we want to ask today, address today, is to what extent do parents have a right to restrict their children in terms of choosing a marriage partner? Does the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em apply with regard to choosing a marriage partner? Usually when I speak about Kibud Av V'Em, you may remember in the past, we try to expand the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. In this case, that's why this year is a little bit different. We're going to try to restrict the scope of Kibud Av V'Em. There are certain issues and certain areas where the Torah says that this is beyond the scope of Kibud Av V'Em. So some of you maybe remember back to the days when you were looking for a marriage partner. You may even remember that your parents were involved in the shidduch. And perhaps you may have sensed that they were too involved in the shidduch. I don't know. Again, everybody has their own tale to tell. But on a halachic level, what rights and what are the parameters of Kibud Av V'Em? The one who notices this and makes a big deal about this is the Meshech Chochma Rabbi Simcha Midvinsk. And in his commentary on this pasuk, Asher Lo Tikach Isha Libni, he says the following. What's going on? Where is Yitzhak in the picture? He doesn't seem to be anywhere to be found. Madalo Tziva Es Yitzhak Benosh Lo Yisa Isha Mibnos Aknani. It doesn't seem that Avraham Avinu gets involved in a direct, shall we say, front-to-front encounter with his son Yitzchak and set the parameters. Instead, Avraham Avinu sets these parameters behind, in a sense, behind Yitzchak's back, insofar as Eliezer is a shliach is concerned. Now, does that mean that Yitzchak would have had a choice, would have had a right to veto this marriage? Or does it mean that somehow magically Avraham Avinu got the green light to serve as the Meshaleach on behalf of Yitzchak, send the Shlichus, and set up a Maisa Shliach such that when Eliezer would marry off Rivka, that marriage is valid, it's binding. But what the Meshech Chochma wants to introduce here is a raya to the Marik. Now, B'li Neder, this is going to be our major study for today, the Tshuva of the Marik. The Marik was a late Rishon. He doesn't belong to the classic Rishonim back at the time of the Rambam and Rashi and the Ramban, etc., etc. But nevertheless, he still remains within the purview of that historical period of the Rishonim, so that his rulings have a great deal of weight in Lahaloch. In fact, in this case, the Ramah in Hilchas Kibud Av V'Em in Yerideya actually quotes the Marik. The Marik writes the following, and again, we're going to see how he goes through a lot of reasoning until he arrives at this conclusion, but the bottom line is that Ben Eino Chayev L'Shmo Le'av, the son is not compelled to comply with the commands, the imperative of his father. Im mochabo milisa isha shu chafetz. Now the case that the Marik is addressing is not exactly identical with the discussion about Rivka and Yitzchak. Here's a case where the son, on his own initiative, made a decision. He found a marriage partner. He's found his mate. You know, we could say in modern terms, in romantic terms, he fell in love. This is the woman he wants to marry. And his father comes and he objects. He says, I don't want you to marry this woman. And that would mean that he, the son, would have to drop the idea of the shidduch because of the mitzvah of kibud av v'em. Comes along the Ma'arik and he says, no. In this case, the son is allowed to go ahead and marry the woman asher libo chavetz ba, the one that he wants to marry and he chose. He doesn't have to be restricted or inhibited by the father's request or demand, for that matter, that he doesn't marry this woman.
Is he talking only one way or is he talking both ways?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by both ways.
Meaning, if his father demands that he, is it just that if his father doesn't want him to marry somebody, or is it also if his father wants him to marry a certain person?
Right. So we're going to see over here that your question, which is again right now, that's not the Marik's question. Marik wants to know if the father has veto power on the son's decision. But the flip side, which you're asking, can the father compel him to marry someone and compel his son? That would be that seemed to be a case that's much more in line with what goes on here with Avraham Avinu, that he's choosing a marriage partner, again through the agency of Eliezer, on behalf of his son Yitzchak. So let's see how the story develops. The Meshech Chava continues. Umashet Siva Yitzchak liYaakov lo sikach isha mibno saknani. This is our pasuk here. Who mibneisha amar lo. The authority of Avraham Avinu, and we're going to see this also in the case of Yitzchak, because very similar to what we have here in our context, where Avraham Avinu puts his foot down and he says, "Lo tikach isha lebni mibno saknani," we have a very, very similar, if not identical, command of Yitzchak to Yaakov that he, Yaakov, should not marry isha mibno saknani. And all this, says the Meshech Chachma, is because Avraham Avinu had in his back pocket the brachos. Hashem gave Avraham Avinu the power to give brachos. And he who receives those brachos, for example, Yitzchak, has the right to say to his son, to Yaakov, I'm going to make this a condition. You want to inherit the brachos that I received from my father, meaning the brachos of Avraham, because again, in the context of the brachos of Avraham, the Torah describes as l'chol l'zarech achrecha, that Hashem bestows the brachos of Avraham in such a way that it should be transferred through the generations. And what does God promise in this bracha, in the context of this bracha? Eretz megurecha asher nasan alekim li'Avraham. Avraham had already inherited the land. Now, Avraham's bracha is that you, in this case Yitzchak, will inherit the land, which I receive from Avraham, but only on the condition, l'chol l'zarecha, that you don't marry lo tikach isha mibnos saknani. So there's no question that Yitzchak is within his parameters, is within his rights to set up conditions with regard to the Birchas Avram and the inheritance of the land. He, Yitzchak, is in the driver's seat because he received these brachos. He can decide if and when and to whom he's going to pass on those brachos. So therefore he says to Yaakov, you got to play the game the way I want, according to my rules. Otherwise you're not going to get the brachos and you will not inherit the land. And the rules that I'm setting down restrict you to marry a girl from this land and not from the Bnos Haknani. And the Pasuk says, back in the Parsha Vayera, it says, V'nasati l'chol zarech achrecha es eretz k'nan, v'yisi lachem lahem le'lokim. So it seems that we're not just talking about inheriting the land of Israel, we're talking about the God of Israel. U'pirshu Besof Perek Nosim is Anusa. The Gemara Yevamos interprets this entire episode and says, Lo Tisov Knanis Vishivcha. Don't marry neither a Knanis or a Shivcha Knanis, although Shivcha Knanis has more of a Shaychus to marriage, but she still remains, as far as Yuchsin is concerned, a Knanis. De Lo Lezel Zaracha Basra. The reason why the others have to be very careful to make sure that their children will not marry non-Jewish women is because the non-Jewish mother is going to have the impact on the child and push the child and pull the child away from Yiddishkeit towards her religion. Im kein hu tnai, meaning that since Yitzchak is endowed with the power to give over the land that he inherited from his father Avram, and since Yitzchak understands that this inheritance of the land is a package deal, so to speak, it includes within it Vayisa, Vayisi Lahem Lelokim, Yitzchak therefore could say, look, I'm in the driver's seat, this is my bracha, if I want to pass it on to you, you have to live up to my restrictions. And therefore Yitzchak says to Yaakov, Lo tikach mibnos haknani, because if you marry a woman from the bnos haknani, you forfeit your rights to birchas Avram, linchol ba'aretz. And therefore, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a tnai when he gave the land to Avram, and therefore he says that I'm giving you the land only for certain, you know, to pass it on to certain members of your certain descendants of yours, but not others. Mishum diomar vayar Esav ki birech Yitzchak es Yaakov. So Esav becomes aware of the fact that Yaakov had stolen, so to speak, the brachas from him, and the brachas of Yitzchak were bestowed upon Yaakov. And then following that episode, Yitzchak and Rivka, they send Yaakov to Paddan Aram, and Yaakov there is going to find not one wife, but two wives. Is bebirchu oso vayitzav elov lema lo sikach isham nos knan, einzu mitzvah shemechuiv l'chabit es aviv. This has nothing to do with the mitzvah of Kibbutz, but rather when he says to Yaakov, Lo tikach mibnos haknani, what he's saying is to Yaakov, I'm setting up a condition, a tnai, in the Yerusha Sa'aretz, and passing on the land to you. So this is not a mitzvah, this is just a deal. What I mean by a deal is HaKadosh Baruch Hu could grant the brachos to Avram. Avram now could take these brachos, and if he so chooses, he can transfer them to Yitzchak. Does Yitzchak have to transfer them to Yaakov? The answer is no. He can make a condition. He's in the driver's seat. This has nothing to do with Kibbutz. He's not lording it over his son Yaakov b'Toras. B'toras Aviv, because of Kibbutz Emorah Aviv, but rather B'toras Tanai. And his Tanai is, I make this following condition. You want the brachos, you've got to live up to this condition. You have to make sure that you guarantee me that you will not marry a woman, Mibros Kanan. So in other words, if the Marik is saying that parents within the purview of Kibbutz Avim have no authority over their children vis-a-vis marriage, then why is it that Yitzchak makes a demand upon Yaakov and he excludes certain ladies from marriage? Says the Meshech Chochmah, that's not Nidin Kibbutz Av. It's not that Yitzchak is flexing the muscle of, well, I am your father and you have to listen to me, but rather I have over your head the Nachla of Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to determine whether I want to share that Nachla and transfer it to you. It's all dependent upon whether you fulfill this Tanai. Now if we take this approach of the Meshech Chochmah one generation earlier, meaning if we apply it to the relationship between Avram and Yitzchak, we could say that Avram Avinu is going to bestow the brachas on Yitzchak conditional on the fact that Yitzchak will not marry a woman from Bnos Kanan. So once again, we're defending the position of the Marik. The Marik says that it's outside the authority of parents to get involved with Shidduchim and to impinge upon the child's decision to marry so-and-so. And now we have a question from our parasha where Avram Avinu is setting up these restrictions for Yitzchak's marriage partner. What right does Avram Avinu have to do so? And the answer is, says the Meshech Chochmah, we're not talking about Kibbutz Av at all. We're not talking about the mitzvah, the chovah, to respect one's parent, but simply the fact that the parents are holding on to the cards, so to speak. They're holding on to the deck. And they can decide when and under what conditions they want to share it with their children. There's nothing compelling them to share their possessions with their children. And therefore, if they're not compelled to do that, they have a right to make a t'nai. And that's exactly what's happening over here. Lotikach mibnos k'nan is a t'nai. You want to receive my gifts, you want to receive, and I should transfer to you, the legacy of Avram. I'm only going to do so if you've proven yourself to be obedient to the laws of marriage. As I, meaning in this case Yitzchak, sets up. Now, what I want to do now, leaving aside for a moment the parasha of Yitzchak and Al Tikach Mibnos Knan, is take up this issue in Halacha. First we'll quote the Ramah. The Ramah is actually building himself on the Marik, so we'll go through the Marik. Says the Ramah in Yoredeya, Ima'av Mora Biben Lisa Ezu Isha, this was your case, Joe. The father instructs the son to marry a particular woman. V'sheyichbot Tzba Ben, and he's asking that the son climb on board and agree that he wants to marry this woman. Ain sarach l'shmoel a'av. You don't have to listen to your father. So now we have it in both directions. The father cannot exclude a woman that you want to marry. He doesn't have no veto power. Number two, he cannot have a control over this choice, of this decision, whom to marry. He can't say, well, this is the woman you're going to marry. But rather, the son makes his own decision. He doesn't have to listen to his father. It's interesting, the language of the Ramah, Ein Tzarech Lishmoa El Ha'av, sounds like there is Kibud Av Ha'em, but it's more voluntary. In other words, if the child is a very, very good guy, you know, no complications, he just wants to do what's right, and he feels that if his father made this decision, then he wants to make his father happy and live up to his father's request. That's fine. Because what we're saying here is, Ein tzarech lishmoa el ha'av. It doesn't mean that the father's command is totally irrelevant. If all things are equal, and there's no reason to rebel or reject your father's decision, then Adarabba, the mitzvah kibud av ha'em, would command you to marry this woman. But we're talking about a different reality, a different scenario. We're talking about a case where the son is stubbornly refusing to marry the woman that his father wanted him to marry. Says the Rabbah, he's absolutely within his bounds. And even though, right, so let's read again. Even though the father has some sort of power here, and there is some element of kibbutz, but ein tzarech lishmoa. The language of the Ramah, I don't know if you agree with me, of Ein Tzarech Lishmoa, sounds like we're not knocking out Kibud Av Ha'em entirely. We're just saying that Kibud Av Ha'em normally would compel the son. Here it doesn't compel him. There's no absolute force here to coerce him to listen to his father's request to marry such and such a woman. But it doesn't mean that the Kibud Av Ha'em is completely off the radar screen. Ein Tzarech Lishmoa of. And now, Rabosai, if you take a look and you'll see the Ramah is quoting the Marik, let's go back to the Marik himself, which is approximately a century before the Ramah. Vasher nistapakta, the questioner, asked the following question, if yesh kof biad ov, if limchos biad b'no. So again, we're going back to the case where the father wants to exercise a veto power. Does the father actually have the koch biyado to do such a thing and veto a marriage? Now, we're going to have to come back to that line, because that line really waters down the whole psak of the Marik. Okay, so I'm just going to, in my copy, I'm going to just bracket it, and we're going to have to come back and face the music here. He says, "Im hi isha hogeneslo." So let's just kaviyachol skip those words for a moment. And we'll read it thusly. That's just a general statement that the father cannot put his foot down and say, I object to this marriage. Now, what's the compelling logic to clip the wings of the father, limit his authority, and remove the decision or the veto decision of his father from the parameters of the Yad, of the Koch Yad Ha'av? Chada number one, he says, my first line of reasoning is that Afilu L'inyan Mamon, even with regard to financial considerations, investments and the like, now there's a financial decision that has to be made. Let's assume we're going to buy something, and that something is something that his father wants. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that although the son is obligated under the law of Kibbutz Avaim to do whatever he can to get that object, to access it, and then give it to his father, but that's only bechinam, that's only with if he doesn't have to spend money. But if he has to spend money, then Rabbi Yirmiya, that we're studying now, is of the opinion that the father cannot control his son's possessions. What does that mean? The father says, look, you have $100 in the bank. I want you to take that $100 and buy me a year's supply of chocolate cake. So the answer is, we paskin Michel Av. If the father wants me to buy him chocolate cake, he's got to sign the check. I don't have to dig into my pocket for the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av. It means that Kibbutz Av is a mitzvah shebegufo. I have to service my father, but it's not a mitzvah b'mamono. It's not like the case, for example, of Truvas and Maestros, right? Or Esrog, or any of the other mitzvahs. In those cases, if I don't have an Esrog, I got to go out and buy one. But in the case of Kibbutz Av, if I don't have the money to afford to bring my father what he wants me to bring him, then I'm not obligating the mitzvah. Because that's called Mishal Av. And the Marik quotes, not by name, but all the poskim who agree that Kibbutz Av is Mishal Av. Now, Kol Shekein Hacha, if the father has no right or control over the possessions of his son, within the purview of the framework of Kibbutz Av Aim, the father has to pay the bills, he can't compel the son to pay the bills, then Kol Shekein, he says, how much more so do we limit the scope of the power, the authority of the father? Hacha here, in the case where his father objects to his marrying a certain woman, who davra shayach betzaira de gufa, a man wants to marry a woman. Imagine what kind of anguish he's going to experience if he doesn't marry her because his father told him not to marry her. And this psychological anguish is even heavier, if you will, than losing money. If you offer me the possibility of buying off this kind of a tsar, I'll be willing to pay you all the money in the world. So now the Marik has a kal v'chomer. If Kibbutz Av is Mishal Av, which means the father cannot compel me to shell out money on his behalf for whatever he wants, whatever he'll enjoy, then how much more so does the father have no power to take away the serenity or the sanity of his son by saying, don't you dare marry this woman. The son is in a desperate situation. This is the woman he wants to marry. If the father has no control over the son's possessions, how much more so does he not have control over something that entails tsara de gufa? It's almost a physical ailment. He's so psychologically depressed about it that he can't marry this woman because his father put his foot down and said no. Says the Marik, no. That's out of the purview of the authority of the son, of the father over his son. And there's no mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Aim. Now again, we're only talking about veto power. Does that mean that the father has no role to play in choosing a marriage partner for his son. We know that he can't veto, because as we saw here in the Marik, this is called Sarah de Gufa. You cannot cause Sarah de Gufa for your own daughter, and therefore you have to allow her to get married. But in a case where the father wants to have some, at least minimal, contribution and input in the choice of a marriage partner, not in the veto of a marriage partner that was always already chosen, that we don't know. That's not the subject of the Marik. It could be the Marik didn't want to answer that question because he felt it was so basic and so simple. The father has no right to choose a marriage partner for his son. There's no such thing as Kedusha without Das, without Askama, without a total, absolute agreement, both on the part of the Chosan and as well as behalf of the Miskadeshes. And this statement in the Marik, that the father cannot force the child to spend money for Kibbut Avim, is really codifying an explicit Gemara in Masechta Kiddushin, which you'll see on number 5. And it says, Mishel mi, Rabbi Udomar Mishel ben, Rabbi Nosson Barboshiover Mishel av, Ori le Rabbanan le Rabbi Yirmiya, the Amri le Bray de Rabbi Yirmiya, Kimandi Omar Mishel av. So we have a long list of Amoraim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nosson, and others. They all say that the Marik is right. What do I mean to say? Let me clarify. The Maskana, the Gemara in Kiddushin, is Mishel Av. How do I know this? It says, Ori le Rabbanu Rab Yirmiya, Kiman the Omer Mishel Av. It's not common for the Gemara to come to some clear-cut decision and conclusion about the Horas HaDin if there's a machlokis. But here, the Gemara doesn't hesitate to establish that Kibud Av is Mishel Av. So my father tells you to bring him a steak, that's fine, but he's got to pay the bills. And if that be the case, we're left with the Kal V'chomer of the Marik. If the father's wings are clipped, that he has no control over his son's purse, in order to force his son to spend money on his behalf, the father is very limited. Then how much more so in the case of Sarah de Gufa, if the father wants to object his marrying the woman of his choice, certainly the father has no authority and no control. The Marie continues, he says... Yeah, go ahead, please.
Sorry, but the son does have a right to choose to spend his own, and then...
Yes.
...is up.
Right. So a lot of the discussion that we're going to have here today, in Mirtz Hashem, is whether or not the son, even though he's not obligated to oblige his father, would he be encouraged to do so? But let's just see the next paragraph of the Marie, because we're not even halfway there. The Ode, the Karov Hadover Bienai Leos Kimitsuva Lavar al Divrei Torah. The Gemara establishes a condition that if your father tells you to violate the Torah, Chas V'Shalom, to listen to your father. And here we have an issue of Lavar al Divrei Torah. Why? Sharei Omer Rabbi Seinu Zal Osu Liyodim Shikadish Zishat Shirenu. A man is not allowed to marry a woman if he never saw her. And the reason for that is we're afraid that later on when he sees her, he might find a Dover Meguna, and he'll come to violate the Isur of Lo Tisna Sachicha Bilvavecha. So he has to see her. El Sha'achshav Hutar. The Gemara says that we can be lenient about this in a case where he's afraid that if he doesn't take advantage of the immediate opportunity, then guess what? Somebody else might marry her. And this is all codified in the poskim. Hare, what do we see from this? We don't want him to marry a woman that he's never seen, and therefore he may find her unattractive in his eyes. We want to guarantee that he marry the woman that his heart wants to marry. And she finds grace in his eyes. V'chein b'kamim b'komos, chashu chachom zal l'chabiv yishal b'ayla. This we had already last week's parasha, not this past Shabbos, the one before, when the Malachim say, I raise Sari Shtecha Kdei Lecharval Baila. So we do everything to have maximum, to try to increase and intensify the love between a husband and a wife. So therefore it's absolutely critical to allow the son to marry the woman that he wants to marry. Ukvar Heshiv Rabbeinu Osher, the ima of Mitzuva al Bino, Shelo Yedaber Imploni. His father says you could talk and converse with everyone except for this guy. I don't want you to talk to this guy. And the father adds a certain dramatic emphasis. He says, Lo Yimcholo Al Masha Osalo. The father says that I'm not going to give mechila and forgiveness for something that you insulted me or some sort of crime. If I ben rotza lahashlim ein lochish l'tzavos av, if the son has a desire to be mashlim, meaning the father says, I don't want you to talk to so and so, I don't want you to forgive him, I don't want you to enter into any discussions whatsoever with him. The father is not going to listen, the son is not going to listen to his father. Why? Because his father is contravening the Torah law. And he, the son, is absolutely committed to fulfill the Torah law. The father is saying, you know what? Let's create a certain sinna over here. But the rule is, they shall also listen to Shum Yehudi. We're not allowed to hate any Jew. Is Kule Kiriisa Bitur? Hokanami Lo Shna Dlefi Anias Taiti. Therefore it should be avoided. So let's just review this last paragraph in the Marik. The Marik is saying that if you grant the father the rights and the authority to determine who his son should marry, whom his son should marry, that would be a violation of a kind of penyikad, of a kind of usul yodim l'kadish isha'at shir'ena. Because if the father determines who the son wants to marry, and the son is not interested in this marriage, he has his eyes set on a different woman, which will enhance, that's his love. And if you allow the father to say, no, I'm not going to let you marry this woman that you want to marry, that's even worse than a father telling his son, don't fulfill a mitzvah. What's the case of a father who says to his son, don't fulfill a mitzvah? That's the case where he says, I don't want you to be mochel ploni almoni. I want you to exclude him, not talk to him, and don't be mochel him. That's called laval divrei Torah. The Torah says, v'ahavta l'reich kamocha. Yes, maybe he wronged you, but now he's asking for forgiveness and pardon. You have to grant him that, despite the fact that the father says, lo yimcholo. Because there's a parameter, there's a limit to the father's authority. He cannot put you, his son, into a position where he'll violate the Torah law. And the Torah law is that you marry the woman you love. Interesting. Why do you marry the woman you love? Because that's gonna guarantee that you'll have shalom bayis, you'll have love in the house. But if your father forces you to marry another woman and you don't love that woman, that's Shemi is gana olav, and that already comes under the violation of Yahavta L'Reich Kamocha. David?
Yeah, so then how did Avraham Avinu send Eliezer in the first place? Because Yitzchak hadn't seen her yet. So how does he know that Yitzchak is anything like her?
So the answer to that question is that Eliezer is in a very rare and urgent moment in time. This is a critical moment. Right now, Rivka is available. The entire future of Klal Yisrael depends upon this marriage relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. So for that sense of period of Arivia, and now it's not just period of Arivia on an individual level, but to set up Klal Yisrael, we're going to overlook and override the Easter of Asur Liyodam Lakadish Ishta Kodam Shir Ena. We're willing to take that chance and that risk that maybe the marriage won't be going well, because we honestly believe that this is the first choice, this is the woman that was designated for Yitzchak, and he's got a, as we say in Yiddish, chaperai. Now's the moment to marry. Now we get to the Mariki number 8.
Okay, now I know.
And he goes on and he says the following. The whole machlokas about Mishal Ava, Mishal Ben only applies to something, some benefit that the father gains personally. He calls it Tzorech HaGuf at the end of the second line. So again, if my father asks me to bring him a steak, so it's going to be machlokas. Do I have to pay the bill or he has to pay the bill? But it's all because it's a tzarech haguf. I am bringing a steak to my father because he will benefit, he will enjoy, physically enjoy that steak. That's called tzarech haguf. If there's something which is irrelevant to the father, ki hocho, like marriage, is pshita de'en koch la'av limchos b'ben. He says, you know what? I don't even need the argument that I presented to you above, and that is that this is outside the purview of the father's sovereignty, if you will. And that's because it's going to be an avera if he doesn't marry the woman that he wants to marry. Forget about all that. I'm going to grant you that in theory the father has the power and the authority even to command the child that, you know, to marry a certain woman who the child is not even interested. The issue here is a much more fundamental issue, says the Marik. What is Kibud Av Ve'Em? Forget about whether it's Mishal Av or Mishal Ben. What is Kibud Av? Define it for me. And he says that Kibud Av equals Tzorech HaGuf. The father is asking the son to do something on his behalf, the father's behalf, that'll be nene, he'll enjoy it. But if he's irrelevant to the whole discussion, if I tell my son, I want you to study electrical engineering, and I don't want you to study, abstract math, I don't have, that's not relevant to me as a father. What difference does it make what profession my son enters into? He's the one who's going to have to live his life, not me. And therefore the decision is totally up to the son himself, outside of the purview of the father. And says the Marik, the most profound and crystal clear example of that rule is going to be marriage. What does the father gain or lose from the son marrying this woman or that man? Is it nogeh him? Does he have any tzar de gufa or any hanos haguf? Therefore, says the Marik, it's outside the purview of his control. Because he doesn't get any benefit from it. He doesn't lose anything by it. It's not shayach to him. And the whole yisod of the definition of Kibud Av is to serve my father, to give him food, to warm up his body if he's cold, and put a blanket on it because the mitzvah is tzorech haguf. That's the nature of the mitzvah. It doesn't go beyond tzorech haguf. This has tremendous repercussions. It means my parents have no right to say anything to me that's not relevant to them in a direct way. They can't tell me what university to go to. They can't tell me what woman to marry. They can't tell me what profession to go into. Batich, the whole thing is gone. You want to know what Kibud Av is, says the Marik? Bring your father a cup of tea. That's Kibud Av. You want to cover him when he's cold? That's Kibud Av. David?
So Agmas Nefesh does not come into the play. He'll get sick from...
Excellent. Okay. So that's going to come up later on. Does the father have a right to say that if you marry this woman, I'm going to suffer tzar de gufa, meaning I'm going to be in psychological anguish? David, did you want to say something?
Well, I had a similar type of question. There could be other, shall we say, not results, but whatever, repercussions. If the son marries a certain woman, these other children to worry about to get married, and then they'll speak about the family. Oh, the first son married a jailbird or something.
Right.
So it will affect.
Right. In other words, sometimes marriage could sometimes marriage could soil and damage the reputation of an entire family. And that's
it's not so posh that there's no repercussions about.
Correct. But right now, at this point, the Ma'arik is taking a very limited definition of the scope of Kibud Av V'Em. Tzorech HaGuf, that's his definition. If you look in the Braisa and Kiddushin, every single case mentioned in the Braisa is Tzorech HaGuf. Machilo, Mashkeu, Malbisho, bring him a blanket so he's cold. Oh, this is all Tzorech HaGuf. So therefore, Ein Koch B'Yad Av. The father has no koch. Limchos. He can't say, I don't want you to marry this woman. It's not negated to him personally. If that be the case, forget about the discussion of, well, the child might dislike the woman that his father chose for him, and therefore he's going to violate V'Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, and we'll make a kalachomer from Mishal Av, and say if Mishal Av means that the father has no control of his finances, then for sure he has no control of the woman. Forget about all that. It's not even Kibud Av. Ugdola mizu kosu v'tosvus shans v'perkav the kedushin b'shem Rabbeinu Yitzchok dafil l'mad yom mishal ben hani v'likagon sh'av nena miguf adover ki hachashu nena mimamon haben amalim nizdami lo kovid aviv v'chazora kibud aviv v'chazoras avedoso kemen sh'av ena av nena b'guf avedo ena ben chayv l'hafzid avedoso b'shvil aviv. In other words, there are two lost objects, and the son has the ability to retrieve one of them, but not the other one. He can only do one at a time. So we're going to say to the son, you know what? Retrieve your lost object. You get first rights here. Even according to the Man Yomer who says, Mishal Ben. And the reason for that is, so claims Tosu Shantzadei Rabbeinu Yitzchak, is because the father is not going to have any hanos haguf from the Ashavas Avedu. Meaning that if the son would give priority to his father's Avedu to return that first, that's not Kibud Av. Because Kibud Av, according to Tosfos Shans, is dafka hanos haguf. And if I bring this Avedu back to you, I return your purse to you, that's not called hanos haguf. But he's not finished. The Odi says, in other words, when his father commands him not to marry this woman or to marry this woman, if he decides to be inobedient and not listen to his father, that doesn't mean that in any way he's curtailing his dedication to what he has to do for Kibud Av, to all the physical pleasures he has to and comforts that he has to supply for his father. So there's no way of saying that by marrying this woman against his father's will, that's going to detract from his general Kibud Av. No, he's going to continue with the mitzvah of Kibud Av as he always did, even though he married a woman that his father didn't want him to marry.
I'm sorry, didn't the Rav give a shiur many, many years ago on the Rambam with regards to the six being the just the prime examples, but that it expands out very much so?
I don't remember the Rav Shia. I do remember Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, the Rav's brother.
I'm saying Rav Berzon.
If I gave a shiur about this topic, it's in the name of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik.
Okay. That's just the prime.
Also, not only Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, but there was a Rosh Hashiva in Telz. Trying to remember his name, it's escaping me now. Maybe it was Stein, maybe Rav Stein, the Rosh Hashiva of Telz.
Wow.
And we discussed this question. I don't remember that we expanded Kibud Av V'Em.
Yeah, but the six was only it's the core.
Correct.
It went all over the place because you can't just narrow it down.
It only blossomed as toldos of avos, if you follow me. You know, it's to the extent that it resembles those six categories. What's common that links up all six categories is hanos haguf. Again, we don't have to limit hanos haguf to those cases. We can expand them to anything that comes under hanos haguf. But beyond hanos haguf, for example, Hashavas Aveda, that's not within the, that's not even a told of the six cases mentioned in the Braisa. V'hadi amrinan, but you'll ask me akasha. The Gemara says that if your father is throwing your purse into the yam, that you're not allowed to even make a bad face. You have to accept this within the context of kibud av va'em. He says, "Farhaminu Rabbeinu Yitzchak." This same Rabbeinu Yitzchak that's quoted by the Tosfos Shanz interprets that's the Arniki di'av l'divrei ha'omer mishal av. Wait, wait, just a second. I understood this before that if you're holding kibud av mishal av, and this Arniki is the possession of his father. Just one second. Wait, let me read another line. Because I'm a little bit confused here. He says, "Afilu l'divrei omer mishal ben, ubi arniki de ben." Hayu dafka, ah. If it's arniki de av, ah, it means the father is suffering a financial loss if he owns the purse. Is therefore, since the father owns the purse, and we're holding kibud av mishal av, that's why this comes under kibud av. But if I hold mishal ben, then this case is the arniki de ben. Is memela? There is kibud av. So again, the if it belongs to the arniki, belongs to the av, then he's still not anos aguf. If we assume kibud av is only anos aguf, ainu dafka sha'av nene bashlocha zuk gon lemirmi emasa inish debate. Oh, I see what he's saying. How could this Zrikas Arniki Liam come under the category of kibud av va'em? There's no element of hanos haguf. You could call it hashavas aveda if it belongs to the father, but it's certainly not hanos haguf. So Rabbi Yitzchak answers that the father is going to get benefit from the hashlocha. Now, what benefit could you imagine in your wildest dreams that a father get when they throw his arniki into the bottom of the sea? The answer is lemirbe abese, a masa inshi debese. This is a Gemara in Masech de Shabbos. Do you remember this at all? The Gemara says that korea, which means ripping something, is a malacha that generates a chiv kares. So the Gemara asks, but wait a minute, it's mekalkel when you rip garments. You know, why is that a malacha? It's mekalkel that undermines the entire fabric of what Melechah Shabbos is all about. Melechah Shabbos means constructive, not destructive. So if he rips apart a beged, so the Gemara answers that it was a case where mirma emosei aincha debesei. He actually wants to scare his family members. You know, that's called emosa. Emosa means ema. So if you want to show your family members that you mean business, so one thing you can do is take your fist and bang it on the table. Another thing you can do is start ripping garments. Because when you rip garments, that's an expression of passion, of extreme anger over here. I'm very angry at the way you're behaving. And don't fool around with me. Because I will rip garments and I'll do even worse. But it comes out that the hashlacha is meaningful for the father. In other words, the father gets some benefit. It's a little bit problematic here because we said it had to be anos haguf. I guess psychological hano is also hano. As if he can gain the psychology that he's guiding his children in the right path, then that too is called hanoas haguf. Now he quotes the Rambam. Maybe this is the Rambam that Joe you meant before. Polig al divrei Rabbeinu Yitzchak. The Rambam just mentions this case where the father takes the arnike and he throws it into the yam. He doesn't mention that he's interested in lahatil emal b'nei beiso. So implying that even if it's a totally destructive act, there still is a kibud av va'em. And how could a destructive act be kibud av va'em if the father's not getting any benefit from it? So we see that the Rambam is operating with a broader definition of kibud av va'em. Ah, that's what we spoke about. Now I remember. Joe, you stimulated my memory from years ago. This must have been about 5 years ago, at least, maybe more. And what we said was that the Rambam has this broadened definition of kibud av va'em, and it's not limited to the avos and toldos of hanas haguf.
Right.
In other words, the Rambam's definition of kibud av va'em is tzivui. That you have to fulfill the will of your father as he expresses it in an utterance. Just like we have to fulfill the will of God, kibud av va'em means we have to fulfill the will of man. That's the Rambam's definition. But this Rabbeinu Yitzchak, who's being quoted by the Tosfos Shanz, he's of the opinion that kibud av va'em is not to fulfill the will of your father, but rather to give your father hanas haguf. And since in the case of marriage, when the son's choosing a marriage partner, that has nothing to do with the hanos haguf of the father, therefore it's outside and beyond the pale of kibud av va'em, but that's only according to Rabbeinu Yitzchak, it's not according to the Rambam. V'gam polig al mashehem midu Rabbeinu Yitzchak b'arniki shel av, the Rambam assumes that the arniki belongs to the son. So you see that the Rambam has this expanded definition of kibud av va'em that applies even when the father himself is not getting any benefit from it. And according to the Rambam, we're talking about the arniki shel ben, b'kamakom yesh lechalik, the afal gav, the ena ben rashoi lahachlim aviv, ulitzaro b'shvil mamono, b'kamakom eno chayev hu lahafsid mamono b'shvil kibud aviv. In other words, this is the svara that you were saying before, that maybe if he tells his son to marry this woman and instead his son rebels and marries a different woman, the father is going to suffer as a result, a tsar, a psychological tsar, or maybe it'll impact on the reputation of the family. That itself might be considered upgraded to the level of hanas haguf, because that's what the Rambam means when the Rambam says that the son, although his money is going down the tubes, he can't embarrass his father. He cannot show his father how pained he is to see his life savings go down to the bottom of the sea. And that's what the Rambam means, because that already comes under hanas haguf. V'chein tzarech lomar kan sharei Rabbeinu Moshe atzmo posa kimandi omer mishal aviv elavari tzarech lechalek kechakalasi dekolshken she'en lo laniach milikach isha hogenes lo v'yishar be'enu. Now Rabbo, so we go back to the two words on the first page, which I told you I didn't understand. Go back to number four for a second. And when the Marik wants to make this bombastic breakthrough and say that the father has no control over his son as far as marriage is concerned, he says, "Im," on the third line, "Im he isha hogeneslo." Why did he add that condition? That she's got to be a woman that's sugapas. And the answer becomes clear only here on the top of page 2 when the Marik introduces a new equation into this whole discussion, and that is an equation between tsar of the father and hanas haguf. If the father is going to suffer psychological anguish, that's called guf. And if that be the case, then all right, the son wants to marry a different woman, but who is this woman? Now again, I'm not sure again which Beis Din is going to have to make this call, but if this woman is an Isha Geneslo, then the Marik would say it's not relevant to the father. He has no relevance here. There's no Tzar de Gufa. This woman is a perfect match for his son. But if, on the other hand, she's not an Isha Ogenes, and that's, David, what you mentioned before, that her grandfather was in jail for embezzling, I don't know what. So in that case, the father might suffer tzara de gufa. He's in anguish. So in other words, this whole major heter of the marik, that I'm allowed to marry someone that my parents don't want me to marry, because it's none of their business, if you will, now he whittles it down a lot. That's only because I've chosen a woman who's an Isha Hogenetz. If, on the other hand, the parents have a leg to stand on, they really have an objective claim. And in a court, they could bring a lawyer who will clarify that there's reasons why they don't want him to marry this woman. Real objective reasons. And it becomes clear now that if the son goes in and marries that woman that the parents are subject, then the parents are going to suffer a kind of humiliation and a tsar. Then the parents have a right to put their foot down, even according to the marik. So in other words, we were very excited about this marik because we thought that the marik was giving the son a lot of freedom of choice. And he was severely restricting the authority and the scope of the chachamim of the parents under the law of kibud av va'em. But the truth is, it's not so. It's not exactly so. The marik is not completely knocking the parents out of the box as far as marriage is concerned. They can still be very much involved in the decision, who should I marry? Because the parents have wisdom, and maybe it pays to listen to the parents. Okay, Rabosai, I think we're going to stop here. And I'll just tell you that the next piece of research that we'd have to do in this context would be the Tzitz Eliezer. The Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg writes a 5-page tshuva on this issue, and specifically with regard to a daughter. Because he says that the father has no rights to stop his son from marrying the woman of his choice because of the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivyah. And the son has chosen a woman and he wants to marry her, and the father vetoes it. He's undermining from the son the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivyah. But in the case of a daughter, she's not obligated in the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Rivyah. Perhaps the father does have jurisdiction and could put his foot down and say, I don't want you to marry this man. And that's what the Rebbe Lesser Waldenberg is going to spend 5 pages to try to knock off that svara. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of it. Let me fill in the missing blanks here with a tshuva of the Meshiv Dovah. So the Netziv quotes the Mechaber in Yoredei and Hilchas Kibud Av Va'Em. The Mechaber paskins that Ima'av Moche B'Ben Lisa is the Isha Shiyachpots, but the father is vetoing the marriage of this girl that his son so much wants to marry, ain't Sarach HaBen L'Shmael of, and the Shulchan Aruch codifies the Marik, but he adds the following proviso: Ze Eino Ela BiOfen SheEin BaIsha Shechavitz BaBizayon VeTzar LiAv. At what point can we say that the choice of a marriage partner on the part of the son would come under Tzara DeGufa of the father? And the answer is Bizayon. And this goes back to what David was saying before, that if this girl comes from a very rough background, and it's a bush of a cherpa, that could be a bizayon. Again, the judges in the court will have to decide this, but that's what the father's claiming. Then the Mechaber says that even the Marik would agree that he's not allowed to marry this girl.
So what, just in terms of a practical application, because we're in Shiduchim ourselves, something came up and the boy is basically a Baal Tshuva and the parents are completely gone, like they're totally out of the picture, not Shomer Shabbos, nothing, far, far away, almost impossible to research, you know, what's going on there. But the boy is trying his hardest in terms of learning, in terms of, you know, getting into Yiddishkeit, and then suddenly you can't research the parents, you can't find out, but what you are finding out is, you know, parents are against this, they don't want to have anything to do with it, they have a shady past, there's, you know, real shyness of tsar both ways on the children and the parents and the children not listening to the parents, and the kid has to run away to Toronto just to escape, right. You know, all that. And it's a very common thing, right? A bal teshuva many times has to run away to live a Jewish life. Minimize the tzar to the parents also, who can't stand that he's taking on this thing called Torah mitzvahs.
Right. Let's see if the Meshiv Dover gives us any clue how to define the parameters of Bizayon v'tzar. Because these terms are very vague. Well, you know, I don't like her because she has fat legs, so don't marry her. You know, I say to my son, that's tzar de goof. Can the father come up with any argument? You know, I want you to marry a girl who's blonde and not a brunette. Obviously, those are ridiculous claims. What the father could claim is that this is an absolute bizarre to the family. For example, this is a child that you want to marry who has no yuchsin. Back in the day, you could say he's an Evid or something along that line.
Right.
So where, you know, how do we get a grasp on these concepts called Bizayim Vitzar? So let's see if the Netziv addresses that question. So far all he's done...
I had a practical mice when I was very young and naive. Right, when we think we know everything, we're in our teens, and we think we know Shas and Paiskim, so we can override our parents and tell them what's the real thing to do at the Seder night.
Yeah.
And there was a situation that came up, and I had mamish this Shaila that the Rav mentioned before, where my father, Zogazon Zayin, told me, do not have anything to do with that person. I'm advising you, as your father, do not have anything to do with that person. A person has a situation. I'm not going into a lot of Lashon Hara, but it's a dangerous situation, it's whatever, and of course I was smarter, so in years following I did have shyness, and it was an extremely, extremely bad situation. My father was saying was 100% for my benefit, for the family's benefit, for everybody's safety, and so on. And any time this situation came up with people involved in the circle around this person, everybody would say, oh, I don't want to hear that name. I don't want, you know, I was done in by him also. Yo, he got you? He got your money? He got your credit cards? Oh, yeah, I don't want to hear about him. You know, had I listened right away,
right.
You know, I wouldn't have even started with it. I'll keep it on the aim. I would have said, listen, you know, my father's X number of years older than me.
Right.
He's a genius. He knows what he's talking about.
Right.
I'm creating him tsar because now he knows that I've been talking with this person. He's seen me talking to him. You know, and you might say 10 years later, did I not tell you 10 years ago not to have anything to do with
it? So, Yudi, I would say the following. Let's differentiate between A, where the father doesn't want to let bygones be bygones, meaning he's holding a grudge against someone, and we have reason to believe that someone is sincerely penitent, and he really wants to change his ways. That's case number one.
No, he didn't. No,
no, wait a minute. No, I'm just saying, let me just try to formulate what the halacha would say.
Right.
So the halacha, I think, would ask the following question. When the father says to the son, I don't want you to have anything to do with this person, and if he's asking you for mechila, I don't want you to be mochel, do the metzias fit into the following category or the second category? If it's the first category, the father's saying that, all right, he's asking for mechila, I have a grudge against him, he hurt me, he this me, that me. Stay away from him. Don't accept his barkoshes mechila. The second case is where the father, with his wisdom, understands that the barkoshes mechila is garnished verit, it's worthless. That this person, in the father's judgment, is an evil influence. And despite the man proving, you know, tzinkis, and he's saying, oh, I'm going to be lobe shchorim and malbe shchorim, it's all a bluff. And if the father has that strong insight or intuition based on his years of experience and his wisdom, that's a whole different story. Then the father is not saying, I don't want you to be mochel him because I hold a grudge against him, this anger here for bygones of the past years. Rather, the father is making a judgment for your benefit, as you said before, Yudi. That's a whole different story. When we talk about the limitations of the father, because the father has no right to tell you don't befriend somebody and don't be mochel somebody, that's because the father is telling you to violate the Torah law. But in this case, where the father has the judgment based on years of experience, and he knows that this person is dangerous, he's not trustworthy, he's going to take advantage of you, he's going to be a bad influence on your life. If the father is doing that, not because he's holding a grudge, not because if it's an aver, he doesn't want you to be mochel, but for very good reasons and objective reasons for your benefit, then I would say that's already a whole different story. That's already, I'm not sure if it's kibud av in the strict sense, but it certainly means you'd be well advised to kowtow to your father, because his intelligence, his wisdom, his insight is that much greater than yours. But I only have 5 more minutes, so if you don't mind, I want to see if we can get anything out of the nitzit. He says the following: V'hine nomar al zeh adin shar time in the marik. There are different reasons in the marik. The kibud av eino el b'mashen ogelo lachilo, meaning anos aguf v'chadoma. But mesha eino ogelo, if it's not anos aguf ein chiv. V'zeh tam hevi bebir agro b'shem chidusha ramban v'rash b'bivom z'perek aleph. That's on Daf Hey and Yivam. It's a major sugi kibbutz. She'ein ikar mitzvahs kibbutz el b'meshi yesh lo hanna. That's one way of understanding the marik. And therefore, if the father wants to put his foot down and veto a certain girl for marriage, that's already not hanos aguf, and that's what the marik is saying. Lefi zeatam, if we go with this reasoning, im hayin oger nesiyas ha'isha zu lahana also. He's saying the following: that what the Ma'arik is saying is that the father is out of the picture because it's not relevant directly to the father. But if it would be relevant to the father, for example, it would be a bizayin to the father if you married this woman. Arur makle ovi v'imos at the end of Chumash, to the Hagrizim Arevel, one of the clothes. You embarrass your father. You put a stain on his reputation. That's already something that the Marik is going to have to agree to. That this is within the purview and the scope of kibud av v'eim. V'afilu mechilas av, the kaimel of the av yochel limcho, is mikol makom al bizyono i'efshal limcho. So even if you would think that the father already, he was mashlim, he got used to the idea of you're marrying this lowlife that's going to put a stain on the family, nevertheless, you're not allowed to marry her because there's no mechila here. The father maybe is giving you lip service and he's saying, I'll mochel you, but there's no mechila. The parameters of mechila are limited to the case of positive things. But when it comes to busha and tsar, there's no mechila. Bikol makom al bizyoni yefshal limcha. And he quotes a shiltas, the Rav Achaigon, because he, the Netziv, was the expert on the shiltas. He wrote a three volume commentary on the shiltas called the Hemek Netziv. Hemek Shelik, excuse me. V'ahachi pashe v'shuta rivash. The rivash was 600 years ago in Spain. He was a very powerful and very influential posek for not only Sfaradim Vashkenazim as well, and he gives this explanation. Od nomar tam al zeh hadin b'marik shamishum de mitzvah lisa isha shenosas chen b'enav. Now the marik is offering a different explanation, justification for the same conclusion. Why is the father out of the picture? Because there's a mitzvah to marry a woman that finds favor in your eyes. And therefore, if the father is telling him, don't marry this woman that found favor in your eyes, yesh bedover nidnu avera, when the father vetoes the son for marrying her, that's already an avera. He calls it a nidnu avera. It's not a full-fledged avera. Because there's a mitzvah to marry the woman of your choice, and he's now telling you to violate that mitzvah. Ubazeh ein mitzvahs kibbutz av. ובאמס כן כוסב התוסס בבחורוס, דהו דאיסא, דמותו לילך, לבייס הפרס, ליסא אישא, אפילו באפשר ליסא גם בלו זה, I'm not familiar with the Tosin Bechoros. We'll have to open up the Tosin if we want to. But El Mikomakom Rotsa Beisha Zu. In other words, you'll say, well, why does he have to violate any Isa to marry this woman? Let him marry a different woman. The answer is he wants to marry this woman. The next Shavuot Mitzvah. Now it's a Mitzvah to marry this woman that he fell in love with that he wants to marry. Vahainu Kimosha Lilmo Torah, we say a person learns only in the place where he wants to learn. A person marries a woman that he wants to marry. Is for who I did.
The Lilmo Torah is a whole other topic in itself.
Which is a whole topic?
No, I mean that's a big one today, especially the Lilmo Torah.
Right. The Afogav, the Efshal Lilmo Makamacher.
Run away from home.
Right. Any of them, Lomid El Vamakom. Shalibo chof. It's who adin nuchal beisha, mikol isha adam, lo mikol isha adam zochali banos. So let's just see. According to the second answer of the Marit, the second approach, what happens if the father vetoes? Ah, I see. I see what he's saying. He's saying that if the son wants to marry this woman and his father vetoes it, then the son has a mitzvah. His father can't object and barricade it, put a barrier from his fulfilling that mitzvah. According to the first answer, the Marik, is the question is whether the father is relevant. It was his relevancy to the father. And the answer is it's bizayin v'tzar to the father. So the father could put his foot down and he can veto the son's choice. But if we're saying no, that the father cannot veto the son's choice because the son has a mitzvah to marry this woman that he fell in love with, then the father would not have any authority on the kibud avim to misharayim to get involved in the son and try to protect, prevent him or veto him from marrying this girl. Ibra kolzeh Doche mitzvahs kibud av. I don't know what he means by this. Mehadi isa biyavamis ish imo viaviv tirov eshapsosei tishmar ani Hashem kulchem chayovim bichvodi. So the father cannot tell you to violate the Shabbos. We call ze eino el mitzvah se demora vekibud. I will be Zion. The kai bi arur lo matzina.
That's going back to what he said before. Koshkin chaser liso should be zayin of the gar tuva the kai bi arur makta of if imai. Even with mechilas arur.
Correct, but that's again up to, but not beyond od niratam. Do you see that line od niratam? Before the words Od Niratam, I think there should be a return button, if you follow what I mean. This is a whole new paragraph, Od Niratam. And I think...
They have to close that window and go into a new window.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, when the Netziv says, at the end of this discussion, that... I suspect that what he's adding here is that even according to the second reason that underlines the psak of the Marik, namely that the father is not relevant here because the son has a mitzvah to marry this woman, but nevertheless we cannot say that the son has a mitzvah to marry this woman if there's a klala here, if there's a kaiba aru. So if it's a matter of mitzvah, say the mor of a kibud, that's one thing. But once it becomes under bizayon, it's not just a lack of respect for his father, but it's mamish humiliating to his father. Then it becomes an aruv. And I think he's whittling down the nafkamina between the first time and the second time. The first time is based on the fact that it's irrelevant to the father. But we said if it's a bizayon, it is relevant to the father. The second time is that the son has a mitzvah to marry this woman because lo mikol isha zocha. And therefore, even though the father suffers bizayon, nevertheless, the son is still free, and not only free, but he's obligated to marry this woman that his father objects for kol toka. Comes along the Netziv in his last paragraph, he says, when you want to reconsider what we've said and look at it a second time, you'll realize that we have to assume, no matter what, that if it's bizayon to the father, then it's also to marry this woman. Even if I go with the second reasoning, that you fell in love with this woman, what's it my father's business, I got to marry her, he can't stop me he can't push me to do an avera by not marrying this woman. Even that opinion would agree that if it's a matter of bizayon to the very reputation of the father, then it comes under an aruv.
Right.
And if it comes under an aura, we never found that kibud av v'aim, the limitations of kibud av v'aim allow you to do something which would become embarrassing, humiliating to your father. There's a special aura in the Torah, a curse for someone who chas v'shalom does such a thing, and he does something that's mitzar his father, humiliates his father, it's a bizayon. So therefore, assuming that the father has a bizayon here when you marry this girl, again, I would say he has to prove that in a Jewish court of law, but if he can establish that there's a bizayon here, then lo mi boy, according to the first explanation of the Marik, where now it's a bizayon that is shayach lo, it's like hanos gufo, but even according to the second explanation of the Marik, that the son has a mitzvah period of rivia, and the father cannot tell him to violate that mitzvah period of rivia. There's no aura, but once you introduce aura into the equation, because it's absolutely humiliating for the father for his son to marry this woman, then even according to the second explanation of the Marik, he would not be allowed to marry this woman because it would come under aura. And what makes it aura? Because of bizayon, he's being mevazeh his father. And this leads us to the tshuva of Rav Eliezer Vollenberg in the discussion about a daughter, with the same halachas that apply to a son. Apply to a daughter. Okay, then we'll stop here.